Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley, joined by Buck Sanders and Jason Staples. You're listening to the Day After podcast, our weekly occurrence. Next week might be a little difficult to have a day after a game, but today we'll do Carolina's win at Georgia Tech, win in Atlanta, Buck. And by the way, you're listening to the JohnnyT-Shirt.com Inside Carolina podcast. Buck, Carolina didn't make it too terribly easy. Turned out to be a comfortable margin, but like we've talked about, Carolina football can be quite the nerve wracker, and it was, at least for a little bit there in Atlanta, before Carolina really grabbed hold of that game.
You got that right, Tommy. And when they cut it to 9 points, I said, okay, here we go. But fortunately, the team did not. And I think, you know, Jason's talked about that before, that when sometimes, and North Carolina's been playing football and, you know, things start headed south, and I think Georgia Tech had the momentum big time at that point, and North Carolina managed to seize it back. So then they went on to make it a 16-point win, and with a score pretty much what all of us predicted, except, you know, maybe take away, I don't know if I'd call it a garbage touchdown there at the end or not, but certainly North Carolina didn't have a full complement of players on the field at that point. So, you know, take it, you know, like the song goes, wrap it up, I'll take it. 38-22 in Georgia Tech, 3-3 on the year. I think Mack Brown sort of feels like he's on schedule for his inaugural season. So I'm going to take it that way.
Yeah, Jason, on the second half of this podcast, I want to talk about just that, where Carolina is at this point in the season. But let's talk a little bit about the good, the bad, and kind of the ugly against Georgia Tech. I thought Carolina, the game plan was surprising. We talked about how bad their pass defense was, but their rush defense has been bad as well. So I was surprised that Carolina came out and threw it as much as they did. But your thoughts on that and how these guys performed? I mean, obviously we can talk about the drop passes that have to stop. But other than that, you know, Carolina's game plan, but the performance, aside from the drops, I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by the game plan as well, just in the sense that, like you said, Georgia Tech was not very good against the run all season, and they were okay against the pass, and they showed actually early on, they gave Sam Howell some trouble in terms of recognizing some of that stuff underneath, and gave him, you know, that he first interception of the year on when he didn't recognize a dropping blitzer, very nearly threw another one early on. But at the same point, you can't really say anything bad about the way they played in the passing game overall in terms of how successful they were doing what they wanted to do against Georgia Tech. So they saw some things there on film that they liked, and they had some opportunities. Biggest problem is they dropped, by my count, three what would have been sure touchdowns and two others that might have been touchdowns. So you're looking at Howell threw four touchdowns in this game. He could have had seven easily. Should have had seven. And by the way, the interception came immediately after the first or the second drop. So he doesn't have that interception either if that ball's caught for a touchdown. So they've got to deal with the drops, no question. I noticed in the post game scoop, Greg Barnes noted that that Daz Newsome was coming into the week tied for the lead in the conference and drop passes, and then dropped three more this game. So he's definitely in the conference lead now for drop passes overall. And De'Ami Brown has six on the year, and that puts him at number two, I believe, in the ACC in terms of drop passes. And, you know, that's not ideal when you're when two of your three starting wide receivers are among the conference leaders, that one and two in total drop passes. So, you know, that's got to get better. And when you've got a true freshman quarterback, especially, you got to help him out. But overall, again, where they are offensively, you've got to be pleased, because they were able to execute despite the drop passes against a pretty good, pretty complex at times Georgia Tech secondary and defense. And I mean, again, when they decided to amp up that tempo, that with they had 97 total plays, 96 if you take out the kneel down, that once they amped up the tempo, you could see them really starting to hit some rhythm, and you could see a little bit of what this offense is going to look like in the future when they feel comfortable enough talent wise to start turning that tempo up without hurting their defense too much.
But one guy that certainly raised his game is Javonte Williams. And I know a lot of people, and I saw Taylor's breakdown over at Inside Carolina, and he talked about Javonte certainly separating himself. I really like Michael Carter and what he brings to the offense as well. But there's no denying that Javonte Williams has got big time written all over him. He showed it against Georgia Tech, 144 yards on 20 carries. It's nice for Sam Howell to be as good as he's been throwing the football, but just to turn around and hand it to 25.
And that came against a Georgia Tech defense, in all fairness, that has been relatively putrid against the run, taking nothing away from Javonte and, you know, taking nothing away from their running game. Plus, nobody really had that kind of success throwing the ball against Georgia Tech, not even the elf, as Jason likes to call him. I think Lawrence threw two picks down there and didn't have a great game, but Clemson ran for 400 yards, so it didn't really matter. But, you know, one of the things that's really interesting to me, and we talked about this some last week, is for Clemson, North Carolina had a very specific game plan, very deliberate. You know, they were huddling at times, taking time off the clock, just really slowing the pace of the game down. And I think in the Clemson game, there may have been 65 total offensive snaps. And in this game against Georgia Tech, they had over 50 in the first half. And it takes, to me, I think that is a tremendously good sign, because it's so hard to do, to modulate tempo that way and get everybody on the same page. Okay, against Clemson, here's the game plan. Here's how we're going to do it. And everybody understands the philosophy and executes and goes at that pace and is comfortable doing it. And then the next game you turn around and you run damn near 100 plays. Phil Longo has come in for some grief on the Tar Pit Premium message board on Inside Carolina. Part of that, I think, is due to, you know, sort of feeling like he was holding down Sam Howell and taking it very slow with him. But I think it's really paying dividends. And one of the best things, I think, about Phil Longo's offense, incorporating the run, you know, Javonte Williams gets, as you say, Tommy, 144 yards on 20 carries. Sam Howell's throwing for 374. And getting that kind of balance out of the offense and doing it in a different way, in a different tempo, probably the one that Phil Longo would prefer to go, but still being able to dial it back for a specific opponent where that particular strategy and that particular tempo gives you the best chance to win.
Jason, I want to come back to you on Phil Longo, but let me talk about JohnnyT-Shirt.com and Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street right quick. They are, of course, sponsors of this podcast, great friends of Inside Carolina, great friends of the Carolina fan. You've got all you can possibly want online at JohnnyT-Shirt.com, and you've got a ton of stuff in the store there on Franklin Street, certainly a place to visit when you're in Chapel Hill for games, for visiting, college visits, whatever your reason for being in Chapel Hill, you need to make Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street your place to go. And if you can't get there, you certainly check out Johnny T-Shirt online. And, of course, 10% off your order for all your Inside Carolina Premium subscribers. So place to go, Johnny T-Shirt, Johnny T-Shirt online. And they got one more promotion. Inside Carolina is running a promotion. It's through Monday, so through tomorrow, if you're listening to this Sunday evening. If you're not a subscriber to Inside Carolina, you need to check it out. You got 2 months for a dollar. You get to hear Buck Sanders and see his daily columns. I mean, that's worth at least $2 a day. And then you get all of Jason's breakdowns, and you get all the football recruiting scoops from Don. You get basketball recruiting scoops from Sherelle. It's just everything you could possibly want if you follow North Carolina sports. And, of course, the premium message boards are on fire. Exclusive gear discounts. I just talked about it with Johnny T-Shirt and that 10% off and a great ticket exchange board. I could go on and on and on about it, but just go to Inside Carolina. And if you're not a subscriber, click on that 2 months for a dollar and check it out before the promotion ends Monday evening. Jason, let me bring you in here. Buck said something I think we need to talk about here on the Inside Carolina Day After podcast is how Phil Longo has really done well with this offense. I think it is fascinating, as Buck mentioned, the modulation of the tempo. It's not just fast, 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 like we kind of talked about last week that Carolina tried to go over the last few years. It's speed when necessary, methodical when necessary. And it's fascinating to watch Longo. And he did that well against Georgia Tech, against a Georgia Tech team that they wanted to try to run off the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think Buck hit it on the head that it's not exactly easy to modulate that way. I mean, generally speaking, if you're a tempo team, you're a tempo team, a high tempo team. I mean, you don't see a lot of high tempo teams decide to slow it down a bunch, because a lot of what you're depending on in those usually more simplified attacks is having defenses out of position, having defenses not able to set up and get into position as well, not able to substitute and all that. And then slowing that down usually takes that away. So a lot of those coaches are not real happy to slow down because it makes it more difficult in their system. Now, the benefit of what Longo's doing is that he's really just running air raid stuff, which you don't have to run at a high tempo. I mean, it's not the same as like the Kendall Briles, Art Briles approach, where you're running the veer and shoot, which is much more dependent on the high tempo there. But you're running the same stuff that Mummy and Leach have run with a huddle for years. Now, obviously you can run it up tempo and that adds an additional layer to it, as we saw this week. But the thing that I think they've done really, really well, and this to me, I've been really pleased and impressed by, and I know this is ridiculous to say, because I mean, the guy's a Hall of Fame coach, got a national championship ring and all that, but I've been so impressed by the way that Mack Brown has managed the football team. And yeah, they've had some late game hiccups here and there, but in terms of making the right decisions on when to call timeouts, with a couple exceptions, when to go for it on fourth down. They've been right on fourth down decisions all year. When to go for two at different points. And the thing is, when in doubt, they've defaulted to the slightly more aggressive option, which analytically, in each case, the analytics have favored them as well. But they've also taken a more aggressive approach than traditional as well. And the other thing that he's done so well, and we've talked about this all year, is the way that Mack Brown has had the offense and the defense married together. And I know, I keep in touch with Dave Bartu, formerly of College Football Matrix and now doing a number of things, including some coaching, doing some coaching search consulting for different universities. And Dave, when North Carolina announced their coordinator hires, he said, oh man, Bateman is one of the best in the country, no doubt. But that's going to be a tough pairing for him, coming from Army and then being paired with Longo, who's a really good coordinator, but you're going to have to face a lot of trials as a defensive coordinator opposite him. That's going to be tough to put those guys together. And what has Mack Brown done? He's managed to get things to work, knowing that you're thin depth wise, knowing that you're in a new system and that you're not as talented as some of the teams that you're playing. And they're being really smart with how they handle things like tempo in order to make sure that it's not one side or the other of the ball that's favored, but the overall team that's benefited. So against Clemson, running a bunch of up-tempo stuff isn't going to help you. It's going to make it less like, and we talked about this before the game, if you recall, we'd said in the pregame podcast, look, this is a game where you want to shorten it as much as possible. You want to make this an 8-possession game. You want to put this down to where if Clemson turns it over once, if there's a couple of mistakes here and there, now you've got more of a chance because there's not 14 possessions. They don't have multiple opportunities for their greater talent and depth to just overwhelm you. You want it to be, again, like go into a casino. You want to play a few hands, win big, and walk away, because the longer you play, the more the house is going to win. And Mack Brown did exactly that against Clemson. He recognized the talent disparity, recognized that the right thing to do is to slow that game down. Even though you're running an offense where ultimately you want to run a bunch of up-tempo stuff, what's the right thing to do when you're a big underdog? Slow that game down. Use tempo really, really carefully to go lower tempo, play four corners. Make this a basketball game that's going to be played in the 40s, and then you've got a chance that maybe they only score 46 and you score 48, as opposed to you play it in the 90s or the 100s, and the better team's going to win a lot. I mean, that's what we've seen at North Carolina basketball for years. Roy Williams has said, look, if we're the more talented team, then we're going to run you off the floor. We want to push this pace, because if there's, you know, 100 possessions in this game, I like our chances of beating you. It's the same thing. And Brown has done exactly the right thing there. And then in this game, you're playing a team that you outclass talent-wise on both sides of the ball. And we talked about prior to the game, this is one of those games where you should win this game. You've got a better team. You've got better players overall. They're making adjustments in terms of getting set for system. So what do you want to do? Let's just turn up the pace and let's play 100. Let's get 100 plays in if we can. Well, that's really smart. Now and it's not often that you see programs do both, but in each case, you're maximizing your chance of winning. Few plays against teams that are better than you, more plays against teams that you're better than. That's exactly how you should play it. And he's been doing that. And that does put more pressure on Phil Longo to be able to get the offense to execute, even at a pace that's not his preference, but they've been able to make it work. And that's been really, really good to see. It's something that, again, I'm always looking, especially when you got an older coach coming back and, you know, seeing how he handles things in terms of the analytics and everything. Brown has been right on it on the analytics all year. He's made the right decisions, and that's key.
But it is interesting, and that's fascinating how this staff is put together. And we've talked about it a lot here, and it'll be talked about a lot more on the website through the course of the week and over the course of the bye week. But one thing that Jay Bateman's been able to do is sort of cobble together, especially a defensive backfield. And the hits just keep coming for Carolina's defensive backfield. I mean, Cameron Kelly's ruled out for the season before the game, after going through everything he had to go to even get eligible from the NCAA. And then Trey Marson goes down Saturday early, and I read something that he, you know, some sort of arm or left arm injury perhaps. But, I mean, at some point, Carolina's got to figure it out with young guys, and Bateman's done a good job of working those guys in. I thought Don Chapman looked pretty good, though Carolina did give up some big plays to Georgia Tech in the second half.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a struggle going forward, Tommy. I mean, without being Debbie Downer about it, I mean, you've got Storm Duck, who's a true freshman, who's playing very, very well, by the way. But he's still a true freshman, and true freshmen are going to make mistakes sometimes. And, you know, as the deeper they go into – and Cameron Kelly, by the way, also a true freshman, who's playing in the secondary. And then you had Trey Morrison, who's a true sophomore. And so they were already very young. They had their very best young players on the field, and now they're going to have to reach a little deeper to put players on the field. Now, hopefully, Trey Morrison can be back in 2 weeks. We don't know what the extent of the injury is. And hopefully, although this is not a defensive backfield thing, it would be really helpful if Jason Strobridge could get full strength in the defensive front. But, yeah, Bateman has done a real good job with barbed wire, duct tape, paper clips, you name it, to stitch together a competent defensive backfield. And I suspect he's going to probably spend the next 2 weeks trying to figure out where his next best options are and getting those guys up to speed. And as I said in my column today, fortunately for North Carolina, over the course of the rest of the year, they don't have Dan Marino or Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees or any of those guys on the schedule. I mean, what's left in terms of the conference as far as quarterbacking is concerned, not to disparage those players. Bryce Perkins has done a good job at Virginia. He's not having nearly as a good year this year as he was having last year. But, you know, there's some good quarterbacks in the league, but they are not world beaters. I'm going to say this unconditionally. From here on to the end of the season, Sam Howell's going to be the best quarterback on the field for either team. So, you know, that's an advantage. But, you know, those guys can still hurt you with their legs. They're capable of making some throws. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But Bateman certainly has his hands full just to get a two deep penciled in and hope it makes it to makes it through a game.
Indeed. Big words there. Big predictions, Buck. You might get the prediction award at the end of the season if that comes to fruition. I'm going to take a short break, come back. I'm going to ask Jason and Buck about what Carolina needs to accomplish over the course of the next 2 weeks before getting back at it against Virginia Tech.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We're back. You're listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. I am Tommy Ashley. That's Buck Sanders. Jason Staples with us. Jason, how much can Jay Bateman do over the course of the next couple of weeks to sort of plug and play in that defensive backfield and on defense, period, to get Carolina ready for this stretch run with at Georgia Tech's always been trouble. At Virginia Tech, Carolina's had a little more success, but it's still there, and who knows what Virginia Tech team will show up. But Jay Bateman's got a lot of work to do over these next 2 weeks. How much can you get done during the course of a season when you've had the attrition that you've had, especially at the backfield?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that when you're dipping into guys that you weren't expecting to play, you're going to have problems because those guys have not gotten the same number of reps over the course of the season to this point. What you're expecting is that guys get better over the course of the season, and you get better by getting reps in practice, by playing, by doing all of this, all of the stuff that these guys haven't been able to do because they've not been 1 and 2 on the depth chart. So that's a hard thing, but you do get them thrown into the fire during the bye week. You do stick them out there and make sure that they at least know what they're doing. And, you know, you roll with what you got. But, I mean, at least they've been going through indie drills. They've been going through all the stuff that you're asking them to do in terms of leverage and tackling and, you know, all of that. But, yeah, it does get a lot harder. By the way, I should mention one of the first things that came to mind. We can't finish this podcast without it. One of the first things that came to mind at the very end of the Georgia Tech game was me thinking, man, dang, Tommy Ashley did Price is Right me. I forgot about that, but I had to get that in there that, you know, you did Price is Right me, just, you know, got me by that $1. So anyway,
all it takes is one, you know, it's a win or a loss, man. You took a loss.
I took the L there. Now Buck got us both. Buck and he wasn't on the podcast there, but in our, in the Inside Carolina predictions that we all go public with, you know, he had 38-18. So he got both of us, but anyway, but no, I mean, it's hard for a defensive coach, especially when you're starting to lean on guys that are playing well, that they're starting to figure it out. And then all of a sudden that you don't have that guy. And the biggest thing is that in some of these cases, those are guys that you're depending on to be able to win a one-on-one. I mean, you're going, now you're down your two best corners. You're down Patrice Rene and you're down, I mean, depending on when Morrison gets back, you're down him. So guys that you would otherwise depend on to maybe win a one-on-one so that you can stop the run with an extra guy, or that you can make sure that the safety shaded just a couple yards over the other side. You can't do that. And then to top that off, you lose Cameron Kelly. You know, Wolfolk is banged up as well. I mean, you start to get to where when you're trying as a defensive coach, when you lose a guy, you try to compensate for that with, you know, making sure that you can move this over here or make sure that call wise you favor this. But when you lose enough guys, you can no longer compensate. You're just worse. And frankly, that's where Carolina's at right now, is they're just not going to be as good on defense as they would be. And you find a way to live with that. You find a way to deal with that. And, you know, that's the unfortunate reality. But we'll see whether that, you know, how much that costs Carolina in the second half of the season. But it's certainly not ideal that they're going into these last six games really at about 65 or 70% of the strength that you would hope for defensively.
Jason, with the little one in the background, that's some passion and some focus there to be able to get your thoughts coherently out there when the little one singing and dancing in the background. I was impressed. Buck, you've had to do that in the past with dogs barking, which is always a good response to some of the questions I ask. But I'm going to ask you this question. Carolina's 3-3. Is that on schedule in your mind for this team?
Well, I think if you go back and look at all of our predictions at the beginning of the year, it would absolutely be on schedule. Now, how they got there would have been totally different. But, you know, I felt like they'd lose to South Carolina and Miami. I felt like they'd win against Wake Forest and Appalachian. And I thought they'd lose against Clemson. I thought they'd beat Georgia Tech. So, and we kind of all got through the first six games and came out pretty much in the same spot, except for Mike Ingersoll. He was really dogging us there, you know, on his predictions. But, you know, how they got there, totally unexpected. The numerical result, 3-3, perfectly expected. That's kind of where I felt they were going to be at, up until the open date. I have to say, I feel a little bit more optimistic on the back half, even though given the injuries of the defensive backfield and all the things that they've faced, I've been very, very encouraged by what I've seen. And based on yesterday's results, I think I have a little bit more confidence that if they have to win a shootout, they've got the pieces to do it. You know, one thought that occurred to me yesterday when I was watching the first half, I don't know what part of the – it was middle of the second half, middle of the second quarter, whatever, and the announcer started talking about how many plays North Carolina had run. And I had no idea they had run that many plays. It did not look to me as if they were rushing. You know, they were going fast, but they weren't hurrying. This is something that y'all talked about before the Georgia Tech game. It reminded me a little bit, different schematically in a lot of ways, but as far as tempo went, one of the few teams that could really go at that kind of pace without looking like they were getting in a rush or hurrying back in the day was Chip Kelly when he was at Oregon. You know, that they could run 100 plays and it would never look like they were getting out over their skis, you know, trying to go too fast. And a lot of teams that do go high tempo don't look that way. They look like they're trying to rush. They're trying to hurry. So even though North Carolina went really high tempo against Georgia Tech, and I think they may have to do that in the future, you know, just based on their personnel situation, they seem to be doing it, going at that speed. Now, it was Georgia Tech, so keep that in mind. But they did not look like they were hurrying or rushing, even though they were running a lot of plays.
Indeed. I thought that was – when they said they had run that many plays, it was sort of shocking to me. Jason, Carolina's in this bye week. They're 3-3. The Coastal is insane. Duke beats the snot out of Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. Virginia Tech turns around and goes down to Miami. And if they didn't almost – I'll keep it PJ – PG crap the bed in the second half, they would have blown Miami out. Now Miami and Virginia play Friday night in a game that is huge for Coastal implications. I mean, it's sitting right in front of North Carolina with the schedule remaining. Your thoughts on the Coastal and on Carolina's chances to get there? The defense will be an issue, but you got to like Carolina's chances at this point. And I doubt anybody would have thought that going in.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carolina has to, I would say, has to be maybe 35% chance of winning the division. And that's despite the defensive stuff. That's because when you start looking at who has to play whom and who Carolina's already beaten, I mean, Miami is the most talented team in the division. But we've seen They just got spanked by Virginia Tech. Although, like you said, Virginia Tech did their dangest to give it back to them. But I look through the schedule and I say, okay, look, Pitt, well, they're Pitt and they're unpredictable. But personnel-wise, North Carolina, that's the one team they've had success against. Then you got Virginia. And I've seen Virginia, you know, I've seen them in real detail. And as good as Virginia is in lots of respects, their offensive line is not very good. And Perkins is a really good overall quarterback, but he's not somebody that terrifies you with his arm. Make him beat you over the top, make them win with some big plays, and you can beat them. And defensively, I think they can be had by a team that's got Carolina's makeup. Virginia Tech, well, they're Virginia Tech. The team that worries me, if I'm looking at the schedule, is Duke. Which is sort of funny when you think about it before the season, but Duke is a team that if they play anything like they did against Virginia Tech, they're the one that I think I would probably favor to win the division right now. And other than that, you know, I think it comes down to North Carolina and Virginia. I mean, really, I think North Carolina, Virginia, and Duke are your three teams that are most likely to win the division at this point. Which, like you said, before the season, is that what anybody would have thought? I mean, Virginia being there, sure, but I think that's how things come down. And to me, the game that I'm really circling to see how the season sort of finishes out is that Duke game. If Carolina can win that Duke game, I think they win the Coastal.
Buck, you agree with Jason there. It's hard to believe that Carolina gets Duke and Virginia at home. Carolina's got to handle business in Blacksburg, but who'd have thunk it going in? Carolina and Duke and Carolina and Virginia being in the catbird seats for Carolina's chance to get that rematch with Clemson. That's crazy.
Yeah, it really is, Tommy. And, you know, I totally agree with Jason that Duke, that might be the game that I would circle. You know, a lot of people will say that we've seen, actual topic started on the Tar Pit Premium board that, UNC versus Virginia will be for the Coastal title. And let's see, I'm not ready to make that call yet. And Duke, they've proven that they can score a lot of points. They scored 45 on Virginia Tech, although I'm not sure Virginia Tech has given up less than 45 this year. They can score points, and they play good, solid defense. They're good on the back end. They're not a team without flaws. They don't have much of a running game at all. That they're not the only team in the conference that's not doesn't have a good running game. Pitt doesn't have a good running game, at least not of what I saw Saturday night, against Duke. So, every one of these teams, has, flaws and weaknesses here and there. There's no complete team in the conference. I suppose Virginia will get closest, but, even at this point, anything's possible. What we do know is that, North Carolina's 1-1. Their one loss came to Clemson, and they've got the tiebreaker over Miami, which it doesn't look like they're going to need because Miami's got two losses. Virginia Tech's got two losses. Georgia Tech has got two losses. It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out, and it may just depend on how these teams can overcome their weaknesses against each other down the stretch.
Fascinating. It's always crazy in the Coastal. I think it's pretty interesting. I do not think 5-3 gets it done. I think 6-2 can get it done, and I think, but I do agree that the Duke game, the Virginia game, they are huge for Carolina. Those are the two teams that Carolina cannot lose to if they want to have any shot at the Coastal. Guys, it's always been fun. We're going to keep it a little shorter than normal on this one. Heading into a bye week, a lot of content in Inside Carolina over the course of the next couple weeks. Even though the Heels don't have a game, a lot of games worth watching. And I'm sure Jason, Buck, and myself will be checking out those games, specifically Virginia and Miami on Friday night. And don't forget to check out Inside Carolina. Get that $2 or 2 month for $1 deal that they got going on. And also JohnnyT-Shirt.com and Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street. Buck and Jason, always a pleasure to get this one knocked out on a Sunday. Appreciate it, guys. We'll talk again soon.
Always fun, Tommy. Enjoyed it, Jason.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild.
Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.